case, which is Kyler versus United States. Mr. Cole.
May it please the court, I'm William Cole, here for the United States. This is a wrongful death case which presents the following issue. When does the negligent failure to report suspected abuse of a child, as required by statute, subject the non-reporter to tort liability? The facts of the case are not in dispute, and a very skeletal version of them is as follows. One child, this is the Norman child, or as we will now call him, child number one, was seen at Great Lakes Naval Hospital showing indications that he, in the words of the statute, may have been abused or neglected. A month later, a second child, the Kyler child, or child number two, dies. And after an investigation, it is discovered for the first time that the injuries that caused the second child's death had been caused by the same babysitter who was earlier caring for child number one. And the mother of child number two sued the government for damages, saying that the government's negligent failure to make that report about the first child caused the death of her child, and the court awarded $4 million. The United States believes that this judgment is wrong for three reasons. First, because the violation of a statute, even a public safety statute, does not in and of itself subject those who negligently violate it to civil tort damages. Second, because there is no implied private right of action in such a statute. And third, because the failure to report child number one's injuries was not, in this case, the proximate cause of the death of child number two. On the first issue, certainly there is nothing expressed in the Illinois statute that says there is a private right of action whenever a report has not been made. Second, although this is a public safety statute, and there are cases in Illinois and elsewhere that say a prima facie case can be made when there is a violation of a public safety statute, this situation is different than most cases. And the reason? This public safety law created a new duty unknown to the common law. This is not a situation where you are simply explaining what an act of negligence is, what a pre-existing duty actually requires, and refining it through statute. This is a decision by the government, here the government of Illinois, to have a brand new duty assessed on the citizens of the state that had hitherto been unknown. Now, there are a lot of permutations to this general statement that you have to have an underlying common law duty to have a statutorily permitted right of action. And that is, first, in a situation like this, there is the creation of an affirmative requirement, not a prohibition. Second, that here the law has been passed for the good of the whole.
It's a good Samaritan statute, basically, and there's no common law duty of good Samaritan.
That's right. It is a variant of a good Samaritan.
Well, as a matter of fact, the common law, there was no cause of action for wrongful death.
Well, that is true as well. But the common law has developed since then.
So the current wrongful death is, you think, common law as it presently exists?
Well, yes. I think that the common law has developed.
So the common law could very well develop in the direction that this case took.
I guess in the future it could. In some fashion, but it hasn't at this point.
You have to start someplace.
Well, that's true. And we don't think, as a general matter, that a federal district court should be the one that starts the ball rolling by interpreting an Illinois statute.
That's where the Douglas file. Why shouldn't he? Why shouldn't he?
Because there is no case in Illinois or any one of the other states where this type of a private right of action has been permitted.
Well, it's a fairly unusual set of circumstances, anyway.
Actually not. There are several cases that we have cited in our briefs that are almost identical fact issues. The Marcelletti case from Michigan, the Perry case from Texas.
Hmm.
For various reasons, courts say, this is going too far. You cannot force individuals to be under the sword of Damocles in this way simply because they haven't called up the state agency that deals with child abuse and have told individuals there that they think there just might be a problem with something that they have seen. For the way this case has been decided, people in that position would never know that whether they might be sued at some point off in the future by somebody who just might have run into the same person who might have caused damage to a child.
That would give them a greater incentive to report the...
Oh, absolutely. So you'd have to report every time you saw a bloody nose.
No, not necessarily bloody nose, but when you had a suspicion that somebody is in particular in a case like this where it's pretty obvious that somebody... really abused the child.
Well, remember, the test in Illinois is simply that there is a reasonable suspicion.
I'm fairly well aware of the law in Illinois. But why isn't a law which puts teeth in that by saying, if you don't, you're going to be liable?
Well, it would certainly put teeth. This would put dragon's teeth.
Well, are there any teeth without these teeth? I mean, is there a penalty for the non-reporting?
If there is shown to be intent not to report, there is. It's a level A misdemeanor for the first time, and then it's a felony for the second time, if there is intent. And that's how the state of Illinois intended to enforce this. It wasn't going after somebody who was acting negligently. And here, the only claim is in negligence.
If they reported, if they reported someone incorrectly, would that person be able to sue?
Again, if they're...
This is a razor's edge problem where if you report a nurse for neglect or what have you, or a daycare worker, and it's a mistake, you are in jeopardy of some sort of...
Not if it's a mistake.
I understand. Yeah, but if they...
If you can show that you had intent to harm the person who you reported.
There's a subtle part of this.
Yes.
It's if you make the report, you're precluded from being subtle unless they can show that you had actual malice that you made the story up.
That is correct.
So the answer is no.
So they're two shields, three.
Two shields.
Right.
In effect, it's protection three.
It's right. It's very carefully balanced. And we think what has happened here is that a district judge has monumentally unbalanced this statute so that hospitals, schools. In fact, as you know, homemakers are included in the names of individuals who are required to report something they see that is suspicious.
What's a homemaker?
What is a homemaker?
A parent.
Well, it doesn't say parent. I believe the word is homemaker.
It is.
And
yeah.
And that's what you were paid to figure out. I haven't any idea what they're talking about.
No, it's because Mr. Mother is coming as well as Mrs. Mother.
I would suggest that the state of Illinois has given us some help in knowing how to proceed in an instance like this where you do not have an underlying common law tort. And that is in the two cases, the Klikas versus Hanover Square condominium case and the Pera v. Tarasco case. The Klikas case was the one dealing with a law requiring that you clear off sidewalks on public ground adjacent to your own private property. And what Illinois has said is that will not lead to tort liability if somebody slips after you haven't done what you were required to do. And in the Cara v. Taresco case...
Reassuring. I thought we had to clear the sidewalks.
Well, you do. There is a penalty. I think it could be a $500 penalty. But it doesn't lead to tort liability.
That's interesting.
It doesn't mean that somebody who falls... And this, you know, the paradigm for this was something that we cited in our brief. And that's Dean Thayer's 1914 article in the Harvard Law Journal, Harvard Law Review, which explained what the difference is between these type of public safety statutes and other public safety statutes that are based on the common law. And he said specifically, in these clear off snow and ice cases, you just cannot find people liable.
Well, if you start to clean it off and do it negligently and fail to clean it off appropriately, then you're liable.
Oh, that could well be true, yes.
Well, isn't the difference, for instance, if your hospital, in this case, had simply refused to view the patient, the first baby, that then they would be protected because they didn't do anything wrong. But if they viewed the baby and saw that there was abuse and didn't report it, they would be analogous to having started to work on cleaning a thing and doing it negligently.
Yeah, I think that's probably true. And here...
That would create liability in each case.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And if the first child was the one who was subsequently abused, this would be a much tighter case, because then we would have some kind of a connection between the defendant, in this case, the United States, and the plaintiff. And there is no such connection here.
What was the interval between the first incident and the second?
Just about a month, Your Honor.
A month. Do we know anything about how long an investigation would have taken to remove this daycare worker?
That is a matter of dispute in the record. And the government presented testimony saying that it would have taken longer than the period
of time
directly.
That's your proximate cause argument.
That gets into the proximate cause issue. And we brought in people from the Illinois agency who said that they would not have been able to do this in all likelihood. But the plaintiffs brought in a local expert who said that they could. Who,
as a matter of fact, the agency you're talking about is not one I'd put a lot of credence in, so...
Well, that I think cuts in our favor, Your Honor.
Was the Navy also involved? Would the Navy also be involved?
No. I mean, the Navy would have been involved. It's not involved in this case because Judge Maravich made the determination that violation of the Navy's own regulations was not a proper issue for this case, and that has not been appealed by the other side.
Understand yourself, and Nichols.
Yes. Thank you very much.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Cole. Mr. Suhadolnik?
May it please the court, counsel. I'm William Suhadolnik. Your Honors, we're here today reviewing the decisions of two district court judges, one Judge Maravich and Judge Manning. I submit that their decisions were proper for the reasons that I will briefly discuss. The government attempts to show that or allege that this is a heretofore unknown cause of action. In regard to the facts of the underlying case, the government admitted that it negligently breached its duty, mandatory reporting duty, to report the suspected abuse of the Norman child, and only went to trial on the issue of the proximate causation. They are now asking this court to reverse the original finding of Judge Maravich that allowed the cause of action to stand. I think it's important that Judge Maravich specifically found that a cause of action negligence was stated because there was a violation of, looking at the public policy considerations of why the statute was enacted and why the Kyler child fell within the class that was the statute was entitled to protect. His injuries were of the nature that was foreseeably contemplated by a violation of the act.
Well, but now are you arguing that there's an implied right of damages suit here, or that this is, you know, defining the standard of care? They are separate.
Judge, both. Judge Mirovich was correct in finding that it was negligent.
Well, the first is weak, though. I mean, there really isn't any evidence that Illinois would allow damages here.
Well, Judge,
as Mr. Cole said, you know, it does seem to be this balance where you have, you know, you have protection for the defendants, but you also have protection for the, you know, against being sued for by the person they.
That is correct, Judge. However, I think that the rationale that Judge Mirovich utilized was correct, because the Illinois Supreme Court in Doe versus Domofsky in 2003 has stated that a cause of action under ANCRA, which this is a reporting statute case, to report the abuse and neglected children, that a cause of action did exist in Doe versus Domofsky, which was cited with approval subsequently by Doe versus Chicago Board of Education, which specifically went, in addition to that, to the proximate causation issues in regard to the foreseeability of a perpetrator causing harm to a second child.
Well, it may be foreseeable, but of course, Mr. Cole's argument is that it's pretty unlikely and realistically that anything would have been done about this person within a month.
Judge,
the agency operates.
Judge, I would respectfully say that the record is replete.
Is there a report to the police?
Judge?
The report is to the police.
The report is to be made to the DCFS hotline, which is what the statute requires.
Don't they notify the police?
Yes, Judge.
There's a notification to the police department.
There is, Judge. There's an elaborate.
And there's an investigation of the police and almost immediately.
Immediately, Judge. And also, because this happened on the Navy base, under essentially the House of the Navy, there are concurrent naval jurisdictions and procedures that go into play with the Illinois Department of Children and Family Services, which would have given greater information and greater efficacy to the investigation. Now, my expert, Cleo Terry, used to be the executive deputy director of the Illinois Department of Children and Family Services, who was the regional director for Great Lakes Naval Hospital. She herself had interaction with the Great Lakes Naval personnel, so she was uniquely familiar with this. And I think that Judge Manning was correct in looking at her trial testimony and determining that the weight of her testimony in regard to the mechanisms that would have gone into place had this been reported greatly outweighed the testimony of George Sumsky, who was essentially an administrator.
But this feeds into Mr. Cole's other argument, because the fact is that whenever you're creating affirmative duties, there are going to be these difficult causation questions. What would have happened with the reporting? We don't really know. We can have, you know, these experts whacking each other. But isn't he right that the common law has never created Good Samaritan obligations?
Well, Judge, I think analogously that the common law has created duties such as with physicians to report communicable diseases and in cases of that nature, which were referred to in the brief. So I think there is a common law duty in that regard. But I think it's more important that the district court found that the legislative intent of the...
But that's a separate issue. I mean you've got two strings to your bow. One is one that is whether you can somehow treat this as creating a duty that you can connect with a common law in some way. And his argument is, no, you have to have an underlying common law duty, and then you can use the statute to define the standard of care, the details of the duty. But the other, and your other string is the legislative intent one. Somehow you think the Illinois legislature wanted to have private suits to enforce this criminal statute.
Judge, I do believe
they
that.
They are separate.
If it is a separate prong, Judge, I certainly understand.
Yeah. But now, doesn't Illinois follow the Court versus Ashe, the Supreme Court approach to implying private rights? And hasn't that become a very rare activity? Courts have become extremely reluctant to imply private rights. They're worried they're upsetting some kind of legislative compromise.
Understood, Judge, but the Court versus Ashe test, as indicated in the Illinois Fisher decision by the Supreme Court, outlined the four prongs, which I think have all been met and articulated by Judge Maravich, although he did not specifically address his ruling in the frame of it being an implied cause of action, implied private cause of action. There have been Illinois cases cited in analogous situations where an implied cause of action was allowed under ANCRA reporting statute. Those are B versus Bethany, Brown versus Farkas. So I think, to your answer your question, Judge, I think the legislature, while the courts have allowed these causes of action to have developed, and they exist right now in 2003, pursuant to the Illinois Appellate Court, which that Doe decision versus Domofsky, certiorari was denied, so I believe that accurately states the law in Illinois at this point.
Those cases dealt with what factual situation?
Judge, the Doe versus Domofsky case was a situation where a school teacher abused a student. The student's parents reported that to the school administration. School administration did nothing. The same teacher later abused a different girl, and a cause of action with negligence and willful wanton conduct was allowed to proceed. The certiorari to the Illinois Supreme Court was denied, and I believe that that case is factually on point on all fours to the case before Your Honor. Also, I think that the underlying purpose of the statute, as this court has indicated, you know, the state has a very weighty interest.
But according to your opponent, in Doe versus Domofsky, the defendant had a pre-existing duty to the victim.
Judge, that's the same thing here. The Naval Hospital has a non-delegable, non-discretionary, mandatory reporting duty to report suspected abuse, to err on the side of caution, even if it, that's why what Mrs. Terry had testified at length, the purpose of it is to identify abusers so they are not allowed to be in a position to abuse again. And this is at the core of the reporting statute, to err on the side of caution, even if it ends up that it tends to be unfounded or could be unfounded. And the government has admitted that it breached its duty and defended this on the proximate causation issue, Judge.
Well, but the defendant here wasn't the employer of the abuser, as in Doe. Is that correct?
Judge, that is correct, but that is the only distinction.
But Doe is pretty conventional, isn't it? That if you have an employer, you have one of your employees commits a tort, and the employer is liable. Well, so what's special about this? Here, of course, your failure is failure to turn in some third party tortfeasor, not someone for whose torts you're responsible.
Well, Judge, I respectfully say that the purpose of the statute, the reporting statute, is to identify potential.
No, but in Doe, you can take the statute and you can say, well, here we have a pre-existing duty that, you know, that your employees are not supposed to abuse students. Okay, so that's a duty. There's a duty of care running to the student, and the statute helps to explain exactly what care consists of in that circumstance. But here, you want to use the statute to create the duty.
Judge, to the extent I believe it's...
Because ordinarily you have no duty to... If you see some stranger beating up a third person, you have absolutely no duty under common law to do anything about that. So you're relying on this statute to create a duty to this third party. And so what Mr. Cole says is that, going back to Thayer, 1914, but I think still the law is that you can't do that.
Don't we have a law in Illinois that says when you see a crime, you're supposed to report it?
Well, Judge,
it's my understanding of the law that you cannot ignore the existence of a crime.
Judge, I think that...
It's not a Good Samaritan statement. You're supposed to report the existence of crime.
Well, in regards to it being a common law duty, I'm not sure...
I said statutory duty. Illinois abolished the common law in criminal cases back about 1961. So, As a matter of fact, it was exactly 1961. It said so specifically. They abolished all common law in criminal cases. But I understood there was a specific rule in Illinois that said you have to report crime. And if you don't, you're yourself guilty of a crime, concealing the evidence of crime.
Well,
Judge, I've got to check on that, but it doesn't make any difference for purposes of this one.
But do you think that the person who fails to report the crime and is committing a separate crime, as Judge Bauer pointed out, do you think that person is liable in damages?
Judge, there
any cases like that?
Judge,
because according to Mr. Cole, the analogous, you know, duty of the homeowner to clear the ice and snow from the sidewalk does not give rise to. And what about that analogy? If he's correct there, that the snow and ice law doesn't give rise to a right of damages, why should this reporting law? Why isn't it just the same thing? You impose duties for the sake of third parties. But it doesn't necessarily follow that you can sue for damages if the duty is violated.
Judge, respectfully, the removal of the snow and ice case, the Kalikas case, was a municipal ordinance that did not involve a statutory mandatory reporting duty that had a legislative purpose of protecting.
But I don't understand the difference because, in fact, the law says, I thought it did create, but apparently it doesn't create. I can breathe easily.
It does if you do it wrong. If you don't do what you're supposed to, that is, you negligently clear it and leave it.
But apparently you can't just say you violated the snow and ice statute, therefore you have to pay me damages. So if that's true, then if you violated, again, the reporting requirement, likely the snow and ice, is to protect third parties, people to whom you ordinarily have no...
Judge, the snow and ice case was... is not analogous to this case because that dealt with not a specific identifiable class like the statute regarding Kyler.
Of course it does, the people who walk in front of your house.
But it's not a reporting statute. And
of course it's not a reporting statute. The point is it's a statute for the benefit of these. It's creating new
duties. It is creating a class of a much greater class of the municipality or the public itself, as opposed to a specifically protected class, which I respectfully submit Christian Kyler was, which is the propriety of the underlying ruling, Judge.
Mm-hmm. You have anything further?
Judge, I have nothing further
okay.
at this point.
Thank you very much, Mr.
Thank you.
Go ahead, moment. Mr. Cole, how much time does he have? 2 minutes?
Let me raise a couple of points. First, regarding Doe versus Domofsky.
Mm.
That was a case where there were two special relationships that permitted tort liability to lie. One was by the school with its employee who had done terrible things before. And second was its obligation to the plaintiff who was a student there at the school for whom there was a special responsibility imposed on the school itself. We have, in this case, neither of those special relationships. The second point I would like to make regards what Judge Bauer was just saying about this possible law in the state of Illinois, because I would like to just carry that a step further. If there is a law in the state of Illinois that requires you to report when you see a felony, or what might be a felony, I mean, that's a very close analogy to the situation we have here. If the lower court was right, then in that situation, if you fail to report something that might have been a robbery, a burglary, a murder, whatever it is, and a couple years hence, the same person who performed that act does it again, then the person who that criminal acted against can come against you in tort on this theory, saying if only you had made that report, that criminal would have been locked up, and therefore I wouldn't have suffered as I did from
that
his
possibility recommend. Exists, you know.
Yes, absolutely.
The possibility exists that the lawsuit would be filed. They might win.
And they did win in this case, and we can't have that in a society that is free and open, I suggest. Secondly, or finally, a couple of other classes have been suggested, along with the Doe versus Domofsky case. Physicians who haven't who have allowed their patients to go out and have harmed other people because they were mentally unstable or had communicable diseases. Once again, the liability has always been imposed because they had a relationship, a special relationship with the patient. Here, there was no such relationship, and that's what makes this different. Thank you very much.
Okay, thank you very much.